Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did it change history? Ahoy there, and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago. We give the movie a memory score and then re-watch the movie to see if the movie is better or worse than we remember. With me, as ever, and in his eye patch, is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Ahoy, Dad. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. We should probably tell our listener that today is National Speak Like a Pirate Day.
Or more of a sailor for me. Generic sailor with an eye patch.
Generic sailor with eye patch. Do we have an accord to complete a decent podcast this evening?
Parlay. Wait, this just feels like last week now.
It does, yeah. We definitely chose the wrong week, didn't we? We did. Pirates of the Caribbean. Nevertheless, it is National Speak Like a Pirate Day. And if you're celebrating, I hope you've had a good one. And so how was your week been, Sam?
It's felt very long, I'll admit, but getting through it, yeah.
Has felt like a long, long time. When we were last here, we talked very much about how much we enjoyed getting up, going to work, coming home, going to bed, getting up. Still enjoying that?
Even more so, to be honest, yeah. The extra tiredness helps a lot.
It never gets old, does it? Anything interesting you want to share with the listeners this week? Any anecdotes? Anything exciting?
Well, no.
Okay, well, we'll move on to a listener question. Very exciting listener question. This one comes from Michael, and Michael is in Kilkenny, which is an island. So thank you,
cool.
Michael.
Nice.
And Michael has emailed to say that he picked up the podcast, and the first one he listened to was Wallace and Gromit, which he really enjoyed. So thank you very much for that, Michael. That's one of our best. So if you haven't heard it, you should definitely go back and listen to it. And he asks this question. His question is that on our podcast, we have talked a lot about unnecessary sequels, which is probably true, we have. But he asks the very good question, which film deserved a sequel but didn't get one?
I have actual answers to this question. I've thought about it a lot.
Okay.
The first one I'll say is, the two that I've chosen do actually have sequels, but the sequels don't feel like they connect very well, which is why I think they should have an actual sequel. So the first one is the first Amazing Spider-Man. That deserves a movie that actually follows on from the first one. And my second one, and I live by this, is The Last Jedi. Star Wars Episode 8. I think that deserved an actual sequel because what we got didn't feel like it was a continuation of the story.
Okay, fair enough. All right, no, that's good. I only have really one answer to this, and the film itself that I say demands a sequel isn't a very good film and is in itself a sequel, so that's a bit of a complication. But I'm going to go with The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, probably a movie that we'll talk about at some point on this podcast. But in the next installment in this series of the books would have been The Silver Chair, which was my favourite book as a kid growing up and probably my favourite Narnia book. And I was so excited that there was going to be a Silver Chair and they never made it.
Yeah.
And so I really felt that I wanted to watch that one. Even though they ruined and murdered The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, I really wanted to watch The Silver Chair. So that's my answer to that question.
I feel like even as a kid, I also wanted to see that, but I wouldn't have known what it was. But it's a shame, yeah.
And maybe The Golden Compass, which again is another one we'll cover.
True.
Because not a very good movie, but what came after in the books was very good and a story worth telling, and they didn't make that one either. So I like yours. Yours are good.
Yeah, they just make unnecessary sequels instead of ones we actually want to see.
Yeah, the sequel that you actually wanted is the one that you didn't get. So thanks very much for your question, Michael. We really appreciate that. Keep your questions coming in. I think next week's episode, we should get into this now, I think. Next week's episode will be questions, because we've got a long list of questions to get through. And we decided that having arrived at the ripe old age of 21, this will be episode 21, we would call this the end of season one. We would then do our listener questions and come back with season two. What do you reckon?
Something along that those lines, yeah. We've got a lot of questions, and hopefully we've got a lot of answers.
It would be a very short podcast if we don't, but I am looking forward to getting into those questions. I'm also excited to have got to episode 21, so it's our 21st birthday.
I know, it's felt very quick considering episode 50 is Cloverfield. I'm going to have to get myself prepared.
It is, but if you think about doing this now as 21 episode blocks, then you've still got to, we've got to get to season 3 first. We'd have probably broken up by then.
creative differences
and then they stop talking. We'll have to put an announcement out on the internet.
Yeah that's true.
So anyway,
and then
oh, go on.
We'd never get an unnecessary sequel either.
No, we would not. That is true. Is the benefit of hindsight season 2 and no, let's not go down that road.
Just in case.
So as always, we went away and we watched the Spiderwick Chronicles, a movie that I gave a memory score of 4. Sam, can you remember what you gave it?
I gave it a 6.
Okay, yeah. So solid middle band, 10 out of 10. And I'm going to begin with my traditional question, which ruins it for everybody. But do you think, or has your score changed?
I think it has, yeah. We'll definitely get into that, but it's changed, yeah.
Yeah, mine has probably changed as well. For the better or for the worse, we'll wait until the end of the podcast to decide. I'm going to kick off by saying something that I didn't remember from the movie, and you can help me out from here. I did forget that Freddie Highmore played two people. I had completely and utterly forgotten that.
Yeah, I kind of wish that I'd also forgotten that.
That doesn't sound very positive. Do you have a view on that?
Well, I don't know. I think there's two things that don't work for me with the casting of Freddie Highmore. And obviously the obvious one is there's two of them.
Yeah.
But the other thing is his American accent. And I think he has gone on to do more things as an American later on in life. But it just, I don't know, I wasn't very convinced about it. And then you have the classic eye lines don't match up, and
yeah,
you can tell someone isn't there. And it's just, I don't know, I know they're supposed to be twins, but would it have really hurt to just use the stand-in and be like, oh, they're brothers, but they're twins, but, you know, not maybe not identical twins?
Or how hard would it have been to cast actual twins?
Yeah, there is that option too. I missed that option, but yeah. It would have.
But there doesn't, you're absolutely right about the stand-in. There doesn't actually seem to be any attempt to have, okay, we'll do like a two shot where Freddie's talking to camera and his stand-in is looking away. There didn't seem to be any of that. It was just like, right, we'll cut and paste on Photoshop and and we'll stick them next to each other and hope nobody notices.
Yeah, I also just find it, I don't know, really, it must be quite difficult practically to play two characters, because one second you're wearing one costume and then you yell cut and then you have to come back into a different costume and pretend. It's just, I don't know, I don't think I would enjoy it. So props to Freddie Highmore for actually doing it at such a young age anyway.
Yeah, he did it. I mean, it's easy to be critical of the way in which it was done, but you definitely can't criticize the fact that you've got this young guy taking that role on and doing a fairly decent job of it. I admit his American accent is iffy, but you do wonder why you couldn't have just found two decent American twins.
I know, because when it comes to twins as well, you can use them, you know, if one of them doesn't want to do it, here's the other person, he can stand in. So it kind of works. I mean, they could have gone down that route for Fred and George for Harry Potter, but they didn't. They actually cast twins.
But I mean, at this point in his career, and I think he was probably about 16 when he made the movie, at this point in his career he had actually been in some films. So, you know, famously, yeah, he had been in, I know for a fact he was in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and I think he was in Arthur and the Invisibles and things. So I guess he is the star of the movie, right?
Yeah, I think he would be the star of the movie.
So he's kind of the leading man of the movie and just happens to be 16. And so they've used Freddie Highmore because maybe they think that's a name that will get people to go and watch the movie.
True. I don't know if there'd be any other reason, actually. So I think you're onto something with that, yeah.
Yeah. The rest of the cast do a fairly game job in their roles, don't they?
Yeah, to be honest, I'd kind of forgotten how much the mother was in it. I don't know if I thought she had more of a role or less of a role, but I think she did a convincing enough job. It's not, it's very, I would say it's kind of a two-dimensional role in a way. And it's one of those where, yeah, you're gonna come along the set maybe once or twice a week, and then that's you wrapped. But yeah, I think she did a decent enough job, and even Grace did quite a good job too, the actress.
Yeah, I think they all did. Yeah, I think her name is Sarah Bolger, who played and she's gone on to do other things as well, but at the time it was kind of, I think she was she not in Stormbreaker?
She was, yeah, that was the other movie that I realized last week that we could watch, and almost chose that instead. I don't remember her in Stormbreaker though, so it'd be interesting when we do revisit it what that'll be like.
In the rest of the cast, you've got the voice actors. You've got Nick Nolte, who does a fairly decent job in that role. And you've got, I had forgotten that you have Martin Short and Seth Rogen all doing fairly good jobs of voicing these characters.
Yeah, one of my notes is that I actually can't believe Seth Rogen's in it. I totally forgot, and it's just so random.
It is completely random. I thought of that as well. And it's one of those things where, you know, sometimes when you do these things where there are actors voicing characters when you don't see the character, you don't always recognize the voice. So if you didn't know, for example, if you didn't know that Steve Carell was doing the voice of Gru in the Despicable Me movies, you wouldn't necessarily know that it was Steve Carell.
Yeah,
Where
exactly.
this one, Seth Rogen, as soon as you heard the voice, you thought, oh, that's Seth Rogen, that is. That's what I got anyway. So it was weird to actually hear that voice coming out of the characters.
Do you know what, as well? I've reread the Spiderwick books this year, completely unrelated, and I think that was the kind of voice that I gave that character anyway, because it is the voice for that kind of character. I can't remember the character's name, but like the Hobgoblin kind of thing. That's the voice that you'd imagine, or I would anyway.
I wonder which one feeds the other, because if you hadn't heard Seth Rogen doing the voice, would you still hear that voice? Because there's always that thing where you watch a movie based on a book, and then when you reread the book, everything that you can see is from the movie, so the visuals of the book. I mean, I still get that with things like Lord of the Rings.
Actually, do you know what's weird about the Spiderwick books is it always reminds me of Mark Hamill. Because he did the audiobook, so that's the voice that I've always put to the book in a way, as opposed to the actors, because I wasn't so. I think as a kid I wouldn't have known, and years later rereading them, I also wouldn't have known. So Mark Hamill for me for some
That's
reason.
cool. I mean, I was going to ask, because I haven't read the books, and one of the things I got from, or one of the things I felt watching this movie was, I was going to ask you the question, had they kind of done a hatchet job on the books? Because there's a lot, because it's not just the Spiderwick Chronicle Part One, and then there's going to be lots of them. This is really the whole story, right?
It is. I think what happened though is that they missed out the fourth book, or at least a big chunk of it. There's like a whole side story with Grace anyway. But I think in a way they do adapt the books quite well, just in terms of dialogue and sort of almost what happens. The books are very short, so there isn't a lot to work off of. But I don't know, I feel like they could have fleshed it out a bit more, given it a bit more story, added the one from the fourth book, but then it would probably have to be a series, and I don't think it would have actually found its footing after the first film.
That's a good point. Yeah, but I just felt it was a bit rushed in the middle. Just as a movie, I felt it was rushing towards its conclusion. And it was a perfectly satisfactory conclusion, but I just sort of felt that it was rushing to get there a bit. And I just thought maybe if they'd taken some time. But you know, you're probably right. I mean, look what they did with The Hobbit, which is a very small book and
Well, yeah, true.
became 9 hours of movie. So, you know, maybe there's an argument for keeping it as short as you possibly can. I don't know.
Yeah, I do think it was a very, it's one of the fastest movie escalations I've ever seen, in terms of, oh, he's found a book, now there's a monster coming after him. And I think that kind of ruins it. I think I saw something in the trivia actually that the whole story takes place over one day, which is actually kind of crazy, because I think the books, it got to be weeks and months, but.
I was going to ask you exactly that, like the passage of time in the book, in the movie rather. It did feel like 24 hours later it was all resolved and everybody lived happily ever after. And like really conveniently happily ever after as well, you know. So great, we've defeated the ogre, we've reunited the daughter and her dad, And we'll all now go on to live happily ever after. Well done. What should we do tomorrow?
Yeah, it's bizarre off the back of that. It's bizarre because you watch all of these series and all of these movies and you're like, well, you've just gone through this magical adventure. It's over. How do you go back to normal life? But for these guys in Spiderwick Chronicles, the movie, it's just, well, that was just Tuesday. Let's get on with the rest of our lives. Yeah. And it's just brilliant. Probably, it's like it didn't even happen.
Probably have to pop to the supermarket tomorrow because, you know, we've
have to do some DIY on the house, buy some more tomato soup and that kind of thing.
We moved in yesterday, saved the world today, and we haven't even been to the supermarket yet. So,
that's a great tagline for something.
Moved in yesterday, saved the world, and went to the supermarket. There were some other things about the movie that I felt could have been better, and that would be, if I say some of the CGI, I think it's okay. I just don't think it's aged very well. You know, the movie's only 16 years old, and if you think about some of the things that we've referred to that are actually a bit older than that, like, for example, Pirates of the Caribbean that we did last week, this one did feel like, A, the CGI might have been done on a slightly smaller budget, and B, therefore hasn't aged particularly well. Did you get a sense of that too, or do you have a different view?
Well, I thought the CGI worked quite well, actually. I didn't really notice it. Obviously, it's supposed to be there, but I don't know, I thought it blended quite well with the characters of the movie. Like, I could see the join between Freddie Highmore and Freddie Highmore, but not so much the goblins and things like that.
That's fair enough.
So it is interesting.
That's fair enough.
Funny enough, saying that, I've just remembered there's a whole bit in the book about a troll, which isn't in the movie as well, but it is in the game.
Well, there was an attempt to sort of getting away from the house, which I thought was good, when they go in the tunnel. And I think there is a troll of some sort in the troll. There's a reference to the troll, and then they go through the tunnel, which just magically happens to go to where the nice old lady who's everybody thinks is mad.
I'm thinking of another troll, by the way. There's like a river troll as well. Okay. That's what I was thinking of.
Well, you know, you get your trolls mixed up sometimes, don't you?
Yeah, always. You know, so there's the ones on the internet as well.
There are the internet trolls as well. And cave trolls. They have a cave troll.
They have a cave troll.
A couple of impressions for you there. I did find, I don't, maybe you can think about this in relation to the books which you've read. I felt that there was quite a strong influence from things like Labyrinth from the early 80s. And definitely the sort of artwork of Arthur Rackham. I don't know if you know the artwork of Arthur Rackham.
Do you know what? I think I do. Yeah,
very famous kind of drawer of fantasy, fairy, goblins and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And because I don't know the books, I just wondered how well you felt that the kind of visuals of the movie had represented what you thought of the book and whether or not you sort of saw any influence from earlier things.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, actually, because quite early on into the movie, I did see a lot of things that looked similar to Labyrinth. I even thought the music, to be honest, felt almost inspired by it. It's been a while since I've seen it, but that's what I sort of remembered of it. And I think the designs are very unique. They're very close to the book, and because there's always pictures and sketches and things like that. And I mean, even down to the detail of the goblins' teeth being pieces of glass and random things. So it did... It almost feels like this was the perfect translation of what was on the page, especially with Mulgrath anyway. Although he was a bit different, but in terms of movie and action villain, it works. So I do think it worked quite well. There's always the sense that they could go in the completely opposite direction and make something that doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, I guess my criticism would be... Now, criticism's too strong a word. The Spiderwick Chronicles, both the books and the movie, don't feel to me that they've attained classic status. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
They were hugely popular at this time. You had read them, presumably started reading them at school, and then you went out and bought each one in the series. But I don't know there's anybody out there saying that they're beloved, they're my favourite book, and I wonder whether this feels a little bit of its time now.
Yeah, I think it definitely has been forgotten about, which is a shame. I mean, they're a good starting point for young kids getting into fantasy, mm-hmm. but I don't know if, I think in a world of better books and better stories, yeah, they don't quite have the same impact that they used to, and I think there's a lot of dated references in them now. I know they tried to make a spin-off book series, but even I couldn't get into that.
I'd really like them to sort of revisit this. I think it probably is deserving of more respect and more classic status than maybe it gets. I can kind of see like an Amazon Prime or Netflix or something like that picking this up and saying we're going to do a 6-part version of the of this these books and we're going to do it properly.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, and I was going to bring this up at some point, but they have done that.
Have
But you
they?
wouldn't know.
I
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
genuinely don't know.
And I'm not saying you wouldn't know because you wouldn't know, but Disney Plus had picked it up, and they'd made it and they'd shot it. But it was one of those instances where they just weren't interested, so they sold it to someone else. And I think what happened was they sold it to a streaming service that is completely free, but you never would have heard of it. And it was actually released quite quickly, and I don't think anyone's watched it. The people that did didn't like it. I've not gotten around to it. I wanted to. I was looking forward to it when it was announced as a Disney Plus series. But as soon as they said, no, we're not doing this, we don't want anything to do with it, let's sell it, I lost interest.
Fair enough. I might check it out because, it did feel like if someone had the money to throw at this, there's probably something that would capture the imagination of a new generation of people and then people of your age who would be nostalgic for it. But I had absolutely no idea that that was the case. Do you know who did the music for this movie?
No. Wait, I should do because this was one of those ones where I bought the CD and listened to the music.
This is the work of a guy that we've discussed on the podcast before. This is the work of James Horner,
That's right, yes.
who we have talked about because, of course, he did The Amazing Spider-Man in 2012.
I can't believe I haven't put that together.
And
That's cool.
Avatar and Titanic and notably the magnificent soundtrack, which is Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan in 1982. And this is and the, and this soundtrack is James Horner. And what's really interesting to me about that is I barely noticed the soundtrack. And it was only for this podcast that I've gone away and thought, oh, it's James Horner, and therefore that's worthy of discussion. But you said you had the CD. How do you rate the soundtrack highly?
I think when I was a kid, it was cool to have the soundtrack because obviously I liked the books. There's one song in particular that always stands out to me, and I've always gone back to it every now and then. I can't remember the name of it. I'm terrible at that sort of thing, but it's the one where Mul'Gorath attacks at the end, and it's that big sort of epic battle music. And I always think of that because as a kid, that was the coolest piece of music I'd ever heard. I actually have fond memories of just listening to it in the kitchen for no apparent reason. So I've always enjoyed it, but it's not one that I've gone back to in adult life.
Yeah, I think you know what, you've probably nailed this film right there in that statement, haven't you? It's a film that was perfectly serviceable for you at the age of whatever you were at the time, and maybe isn't one that you would then see and revisit. It felt this is my one criticism of the movie, okay? It's the one thing I would be fairly critical of. It felt a bit, and it's ridiculous to say this about a children's movie that's 16 years old, but it felt a bit derivative. It didn't feel like it had a particularly original idea working inside of it.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to say that because I know how much you enjoyed the books, and I would like to think the books are better, but the film did feel like a little bit like it was just going through the motions of telling its story, and hence the fact that it sort of seemed to end rather quickly.
I think I'm actually with you on that. Yeah, I think looking at it as an adult, I can totally see that it is just not necessarily a carbon copy, but it's very similar to things that I have seen and things that have been done better, to be honest. I think in an ever-growing world of fantasy and being able to tell your own stories through like Dungeons and Dragons and things like that, it's generic, it's obvious, you know where it's going to go, you know where it's going to end. And I think unfortunately that is just the way I see it as an adult now. As a kid I loved it. As an adult, it's
Yeah.
not that interesting
I
anymore.
think it maybe also came at the tail end of what had been quite a fashionable thing began, I think, by Lord of the Rings in 2001, 2003.
Absolutely.
And then that kind of led to everybody thinking, we've got a story to tell. I guess Harry Potter is responsible as well. Shouldn't forget that. That's running alongside. Then you get the Chronicles of Narnia. And then you get all these kind of... And then you got the Lemony Snicket books. And then you got these. And I think it just kind of finds itself at the tail end of that trend. And then, you know, the next 10, 15 years after that, you then get into Marvel and you get into superheroes, which is then becomes the trope for the next kind of generation. And I think this is just sort of...
For the next forever.
Yeah, we're still talking about that now. And this one, I think, just finds itself at the end of that. And it feels a bit of an afterthought in that series of movies that had been made.
It's an interesting point, actually, because that really does happen. I think even with like the young adult novels and in the height of the Hunger Games, in comes Divergent and it just flops.
Yeah.
It doesn't work because people have had enough of it by that point.
Yeah, absolutely. The actress Sarah Bolger, who played Mallory Grace, she said that she had a horror...
I've been calling her Grace Mallory though.
You have. We should, that's the thing that we were going to talk about as well. That can't be a coincidence.
That's where I've got it from.
Let's pick that out. That cannot be a coincidence, right? Mallory Grace from the Spiderwick Chronicles, Grace Mallory from The Boys. Is that a coincidence, do you think?
Yeah. I hope it isn't. That would be really funny. But I feel stupid now because I've said how much I loved these books as a kid and I watched the movie and I can't get anyone's names right.
Nah, it's fine. We've done it. We've done it all before. It's fine. Anyway, the actress said that the shoot took 4 or 5 months, and she was bored. Wow. She was bored the whole time. She said she was in front of the... This is a direct quote. She was in front of the blue screen for what felt like 24 hours a day, basically just kicking and slicing, chopping things that were nowhere near where she was. And the only thing she enjoyed was the fencing. She had 5 weeks of intense training with the Canadian Olympic fencing coach.
5 weeks seems a bit extreme for what she does in the movie. It does. Now.
But basically she said she was just bored, you know, standing in front of a blue screen, kicking things around. And I sort of felt for her. She's got a definitely thankless task in that role. He spends most of the time shouting at her little brother. And that's it. Big sisters.
It's even like on occasion she can't even talk, she can't even act opposite both brothers because they're not there.
Yeah, it's like
that's so
it's like,
sad.
It's like three people in a room all looking in different directions. despite that, it wasn't necessarily a massive box office flop. I mean, it certainly wasn't a huge success. On a budget of 90 million, it made 164.2. And whenever you say that, you always think that sounds like that's an enormous sum of money. But, you know, it's probably just about cut even by the time you've got all of the marketing and everything else like that. So it didn't feel like, a massive success. And the DVD and Blu-ray sales that came out were kind of, fairly moderate as well. So it sort of appeared and disappeared. And,
That reminds me of something that you've just mentioned about the DVD and Blu-ray sales. And I pointed this out to you in a message, but I bought this film on YouTube to watch it perfectly legally. But for some reason, YouTube has this as an 18 rating. And I don't know why.
Well, it's interesting you say that because it does have a PG-13 rating. And one of the things that's interesting is that Nickelodeon really fought for it to have a PG rating. Okay, because if you think about the movie makers, Nickelodeon, and it's their attempt to break into this market, their audience is very young children. And and so, yeah, they fought tooth and nail to get it to a PG, but they lost. Okay, it's a PG-13. And actually, some of the reviewers had said it's a PG-13 movie. It will cause nightmares for children and things like that. So there was a little bit of controversy about, you know, the actual rating of the movie.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough, to be honest. I don't know if I'd put it as an 18, but I think there's a lot of definitely intense, gruesome... I mean, two of the kids get bitten and scratched. Like, that's not exactly something you want to show to kids.
Yeah, it didn't feel... It didn't,
by invisible creatures, yeah.
It didn't. It's true, isn't it? There are certain things that might scare very young children. But it didn't feel like a PG-13 to me. It you know, maybe we've moved on. It was nominated for awards astonishingly. It was nominated for...
Really?
Yeah, it was nominated for for a Visual Effects Society Award for Outstanding Animated Character, but it lost to The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, astonishingly.
Right.
And it was nominated for two Saturn Awards, which are the Fantasy Movie Awards, and it was nominated for Best Fantasy Film, and Freddie Highmore got a Best Performance for Young Actor, but it didn't win any of those things. So it did get some traction for things. And by the way, Freddie Highmore's acting was praised, apparently, by most of the critics. That seems to be quite significant.
That's strange, but okay. Different times.
I'm sure in a movie for which you have a lot of fondness in terms of your memory of it, there are some out-of-pocket takes and lots of trivia. Surely there must be.
Yeah. No. There's not a lot of trivia for some reason. I think it's probably because it's just a small film. I've picked a few, though, because you know I found some interesting ones, and I like to think other people are interested. This one feels pointless. Jared is called Psycho by his sister. Eventually, Freddie Highmore would play Norman Bates, which was a prequel to Psycho.
Wow. Yeah, that is
thrilling.
That is a good one. I like that one very much. That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah, this is apparently the first Nickelodeon movie that was released in IMAX format, which I never would have guessed.
I was going to ask, was it a 3D movie when it came out?
I don't remember, but I feel like it probably was. Yeah, it seems a bit gimmicky in that sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it did feel like that it was potentially a 3D movie, particularly the end credits. The end credits had the feeling of being a 3D movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to throw this bit of trivia in there because it's important for future. Nick Nolte played a similar shape-shifting character in The Hulk from 2003, which we're going to get to at some point, I assume.
To 2003 Hulk? Yeah, just after Cloverfield.
Yeah.
This is a sort of... Yeah. The only sort of little bit of trivia that I have, and I don't know if you saw this, and it's not my own piece of trivia, but it was the same designers, ILM, who did the design for this movie and for one of the Harry Potter movies. And
yes, I think I know where you're going.
And basically the griffin in this movie is identical to the griffin in The Prisoner of Azkaban. It's like literally they just, so it's like they couldn't be bothered. They just thought, no, this, we'll chuck that one in.
Copy and paste, yeah. Well, it's interesting because I read that bit of trivia as I was watching the film and it hadn't got to the bit with the griffin yet. And as it appeared on screen, I was actually surprised that it didn't look as identical as I thought. But I think what they did was they changed the colour of the feathers. So it's like they're slightly cheated in a way.
Yeah, I thought, again, this is that sort of derivative thing, isn't it? You know, it just felt like that. I have an awful lot of time for people that write books and illustrate books. And I know this is a combination of a writer and illustrator. And I'm certain they poured their heart and soul into constructing these books and everything else. But I always sort of go back to, in the fantasy genre, I always want to go back to the fact that you have to invent something. You have to be the originator of it. And I always get, I'm going to rant here for just a moment. So brace yourselves if you're listening still and you're Sam, brace yourself. I'm going to rant slightly for a second. And most fantasy is derivative. Most fantasy is borrowed from somewhere else. It's incredibly unusual to be the creator of a fantasy. And you can't really see beyond Tolkien as a person that built the world that then other people have taken things from. And then built new worlds from goblins and orcs and things like that. I mean, Tolkien invented orcs, and orcs are everywhere. You know, they pop up in other novels, and everybody says
these are
the orcs, as if you know that they've always existed. But they're a Tolkien invention, and so you get all these things like goblins and gnomes and ogres and trolls and everything else. And of course, they come from much older source than say Tolkien. But it always feels like if you're going to do a fantasy, it's got to be something that's not derivative. Create something new rather than just standing on the shoulders of other people. That's my rant. And I have to say that's what I felt a little bit about the Spiderwick Chronicles.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think especially because this is sort of the way to introduce children to it, but it seems a bit that works for older generations. Let's give it to the kids in the same sort of way, but dumbed down a bit. Yeah, that's my view anyway.
Well, I agree. And but if you're out there and you're a massive fan of the Spiderwick Chronicles, then just get in touch and tell us why we're wrong. And you know, maybe the thing I should do is go away and read the books, because I sort of feel like I've been quite critical there of a thing I don't know anything about, and I really hate doing that. So. But I'd criticize anything that doesn't appear to have an original idea, and this just felt like a book hidden and creatures and I love the fact that it all takes place in a day.
Yeah, to be fair, if you tried to read the books, it would probably last about a day. They're very short.
Unlike it's like the anti Lord of the Rings, isn't it? Where in the book, Frodo finds out he's got the ring and then waits 17 years to do anything about it. Whereas in the movie, he leaves the next morning. So you have to do things like that. Do you have any out of pocket takes on this movie that we haven't mentioned already?
Yeah, I think I've kind of touched upon it though. I think the out of pocket take is that this Spiderwick Chronicles is stuck in a book. I think it's never going to go beyond a book. I think it's just a story on the page. It doesn't work as a movie. It doesn't work as a series. It's just stuck as what it is. And I think that's okay.
I think I would absolutely agree with that. It's perfectly okay for a book to series to be popular and beloved without actually being made into movies. I think sometimes what happens when you do that is you can kind of break, I don't know how what I'm trying to express here, but like the Golden Compass, for example, to give it its proper name, Northern Lights. It's a fabulous book, and therefore you make a movie out of it. And the movie then becomes a crushing disappointment, which means people aren't then going to go and read the book, having seen the movie. Whereas actually, yeah, there's three magnificent books there that have probably been ignored now by a large portion of the country or whatever. That said, that obviously did have a bit of traction when the BBC decided to make a decent version of it. But even things like the Lemony Snicket books, A Series of Unfortunate Events, really good books, really entertaining, really well written, probably didn't need to become that movie, although again it has subsequently become a television series,
which is a good series, by the way. I think
you're right. I think it is, and I think that's why I said this about the Spiderwick Chronicles, completely ignorant of the fact that somebody had already done it. It needed someone to spend some time and love and lavish, you know, all of this stuff on it. And I will check out the series and let our listener know what I think about it, because I think it probably would work better as kind of a six-parter and sort of be well told. So we will see.
I think I've got a lot of fond memories of this as a kid, as I think is quite obvious. There's quite a few things that stuck out to me rewatching it. There was the game. I used to play that all the time after school.
Yeah.
It's a good game. I was thinking of getting it again, to be honest. And yeah, another thing as well is, I have a random memory of, we used to have clay, and you could make the clay into whatever shape you wanted, and then I had to sit in the oven for half an hour and you would get a solid object. Mm-hmm. And I think I used the clay. You can still get that clay, of course. I used the clay to make my own seeing stone. And I remember doing that, which is kind of weird. And speaking of seeing stones, sorry, you were going to say something then.
I was going to say, I remember the seeing stone. I remember you walking around the house with it stuck to your face. I remember that very clearly. Yep.
But it could have been another one, because they also did Happy Meal toys for McDonald's. And I almost rebought one because they were going on eBay, because I thought it'd be funny, but then was like, well, what's actually the point? And they had a little plastic seeing stone with a little, I don't know, like another plastic thing in, but you could see through it. And if you put it up to a light, it would have little fairies in it and little things like that. And I thought it was a really cool gimmick. And I think I do remember taking that one to the shops and like looking up at the moon on a night time and seeing fairies. It's such a clever gimmick.
I think, and it's funny, you always jog little memories. I think I remember that. I genuinely think I remember that. I definitely remember looking in at the moon and seeing fairies, and I hadn't necessarily connected those two things together. So yeah, that's really interesting that I actually do remember that. Do you still have your homemade seeing stone?
I think that's long gone now. It probably broke, to be honest, but no, unfortunately no.
Because you're normally pretty good at things like that. Do you still have the Spiderwick DVD?
No, I don't think I do. I do think I have the Spiderwick book somewhere, though, which is another memory. I remember ordering that and then waiting for the postman to come every day to see if it would arrive. But I do have that somewhere, I think. And another thing, World Book Day at school, I went dressed as Jared. But obviously, that's just casual clothes, so nobody really knew. It's quite funny.
There's a couple of things, that we should say about sort of memory and unique to our podcast is I do remember you being very excited for the movie because you had read the books.
Yeah.
Okay. And I do remember the character of Jared having some influence on how you dressed for a little while afterwards.
Probably, yeah. I'm so predictable.
In the same way that Andrew Garfield is your fashion icon in Spider-Man, there was definitely an influence. When I was watching this movie, I was struck by how much the character of Jared reminded me of you.
Is that because I'm always hitting things?
Yeah, it's because you're always hitting things
Putting
and
holes in the
you're
wall.
grumpy. And whenever you speak to somebody, you find it impossible to maintain eye contact.
That is true. Those who know me.
But I was genuinely struck by how there was an uncanny resemblance, and I just thought, yeah, it's interesting. But it's interesting the things that influence you as a child, and I think you were definitely influenced by Jared, who I suspect you thought was very cool, even from the books.
Yeah, of course I did. Speaking of memories and flashbacks, you know it's a flashback when it's in sepia.
That's so true.
That's
That's
obvious.
so true. That's exactly like the cliches that this movie is kind of riddled with. I thought actually the guy that did that played that role, the Spiderwick role, is doing a really game job in a role
Yeah.
that is just like just keep acting, you're getting paid.
I can't remember if I mentioned this, but when we did Godzilla, he's in Godzilla, and I always think that's the guy from Spiderwick. So this time I was like, that's the guy from Godzilla.
I had seen it. I was trying to remember where I'd placed him, where I'd seen him before. I couldn't place him, and he is like, he's like generic actor, isn't he? He's like if you look in central casting catalogues, you're looking for generic serious actor. He's probably the first picture that is there.
There's a guy like that in Transformers. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's like the soldier guy in charge of everything, and he plays that exact same role in different franchises all the
Yeah,
time.
generic actor. My question, relative to the thing I was saying just a few moments ago, is ha having been so excited about this movie to come out, did it live up to your expectations? Your memory of it as a child, was it one where you were old enough to think I'm quite disappointed in it?
Yeah, I think one thing that I definitely remember from back in the day was they skipped the fourth book. Why would they do that? And I thought that was always a really good book, so I don't know why they just missed it out completely. So I think there was an element of disappointment, but I think the excitement of it and being able to share it with a larger audience of those who watched it, and actually being able to see it, I think that sort of overruled any disappointment that I had, but I think I probably was ultimately disappointed about a few things, yeah.
This is also one of those rare movies, and I'm sure you've got versions of this, what I'm about to say, and this is by no means in any way to be taken as a negative thing, but there would certainly be movies I would drag you to that you were
Yeah.
less interested in watching. This is definitely one of the ones where I wouldn't have watched it if you hadn't wanted to see it. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. I was very quick to answer about the movies that you dragged me to, but no, I think it probably is. I think just the element of it being a kids' movie that's fantasy, I probably did drag you there.
Which was the
Sorry.
which was the, no, it's fine, it's great because that's what we did. What was the movie that I dragged you to?
I don't know. I can't think off the top of my head. I mean, there was always Lord of the Rings, but I enjoyed that too, so that's not really, that doesn't fall into that category. But no, I
Star
think you
Trek,
probably
maybe
think that there's movies.
Star Trek
I don't
2009, was that a drag you to the movies?
I wouldn't agree with that because I still think your excitement for it helped me to want to
Fair
go.
enough, fair
So
enough.
I don't know if there is actually, you might
Okay.
think it, but I don't think there were.
By the way, but when I say dragged me there, you didn't drag me unwillingly. I was perfectly happy to
I
go to
know.
the movies and watch. But do you know what I mean? This is definitely one of those ones where, I wouldn't have watched it. But and often we would be in the movies and we'd see a trailer and we'd sort of, do you remember this? We'd see a trailer and we'd look around at each other and say, yeah, we'll definitely go and see that one.
It's like a thumbs up, thumbs down situation.
Thumbs up, thumbs down situation. Yeah. Okay. Well, that, I think we can move on to our scores for Spiderwick Chronicles, can't we?
I think we can. Yeah. After I'm out of points anyway.
Yeah, me too. I think we've found a lot to say about this movie, and I think that's to our everlasting credit. Do you want to go first or second?
I'm happy to go first. I think you went first last week, I think.
We always
forget. We should check these things, really.
We should really check, shouldn't we? But go on, you go first.
So my score of a 6, just above average, because I had issues with it not copying the books or being too short or whatever. I think as a kid I did enjoy bits and pieces of it because I read the books, and I think that helped. But looking back at it as an adult, it's not that good. I didn't really enjoy it. Like, I didn't find it hard to watch, but as you say, I think if the tables were turned, I think I'd have to be dragged to see it again.
Right.
Not again, but just in general. So unfortunately for poor Spiderwick Chronicles, I'm going to give it a 3 out of 10.
A 3.
Just because I think it... below the surface, I think it could have had something good with it, but it wasn't. I think even the game was better, to be honest, than the film. But yeah, 3 out of 10 for me.
Well, I gave it a 4 out of 10, and regular listeners know I get that's the sort of score I give when I don't really remember, and because I didn't remember, so I didn't want to be massively critical or too praiseworthy of a movie. So I gave it a 4 out of 10 based on the fact that I felt you were disappointed and I could remember it. I'm with you on this. I think that there's something about the movie that's charming and nice, and, you know, if you're going to sit down on a Sunday afternoon and it was now on the telly and you sit down after your dinner and it pops on, you'd probably sit and watch it perfectly happily, but you're not going to seek it out. So I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go 3 out of 10. I'm going to give it a 3.
Wow.
Okay. I think it definitely sits somewhere on our scale, at the bottom of that scale. But I do want to say that even though that sounds like we're really critical of it, I did enjoy watching it. I didn't not enjoy it. It just felt like that it was just great, whatever, a good Sunday afternoon movie, but not much more than that.
There are a few films that we watch where it's like, this is hard to watch because I'm not that interested. This wasn't one of them.
No,
but it still wasn't going to break higher than that, I think, for me.
Would you like to give The Spiderwick Chronicles your one-word review?
Yeah, I'm going to be harsh and just go with disappointing.
I'm going to sort of go with derivative. I felt that there are other films that do similar things that do them better, and this has just lacked a little bit of originality for me.
I was going to go with rushed, but I didn't know if you would go for that, so okay. I changed it.
So your two-word review is disappointing, rushed.
Yeah.
Fair enough. We live with that. At this point in our podcast, we would normally move on and discuss our next movie. But as we're doing a catch-up listener question, I decided that we would do something else, okay? So this is the end of season one, and I'm dropping you in this because you don't know I'm about to do this, okay? So the thing that we're going to do is this. We've now rewatched 21 movies, which has been an awful lot of fun, and we've scored them. And we don't want to go back and reflect on our scores or anything like that. But what I'm really interested in is which film that you've rewatched is the one that you've had the most enjoyment rewatching. So which film, basically my question is, pick your movie of season one.
I can't even remember most of the ones that we watched. I think I could go really obvious, because I did enjoy talking about Lord of the Rings with someone again.
Mm-hmm.
But we did have the same conversation.
Yeah.
I think, it's just going to sound obvious all the time, but I think I really enjoyed rewatching and talking about Curse of the Were-Rabbit again.
Okay.
Because it's such a classic film, and it's nice to revisit it every once in a while. You sound disappointed by my answer.
No, not at all. You always say that. I'm not disappointed at all. I'm interested in it. It's fine.
I think there's probably a good few highlights for me, but yeah, I think Curse of the Were-Rabbit, that's what I'm going to go with.
I think if you are new to the podcast, that is definitely our best episode. So that's definitely the one that we've had the most response to out there. So thanks to the people out there. And I think that's been quite a lot of people's in to our podcast.
It's just because of the Marrow thing, for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's the, you know, hashtag Team Marrow, still a thing at the end of season one. I think for me, I agree with you that there's lots of movies that we've watched that we've talked about before. And it's great to have those conversations and allow other people out there to join in and listen. I think the film that was a surprise that I enjoyed it as much as I did was Flushed Away. I really liked Flushed Away. And as I said, when in sort of the end of the episode in which we did it, somewhere in there is a movie that's classic, just dying to get out, that people will come back to and realize just how brilliant it was. So, you know, we could talk about, we've done all the Star Wars movies, we've done a Lord of the Rings movie, and they're all fun to do. But I think I'm going to go with my movie of season one, just because of I was surprised at how much I liked it, is Flushed Away.
Nice.
We're definitely Aardman geeks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've totally gone through and through.
Definitely gone for two Aardman movies. So, listeners out there, we've gone with The Curse of the Rare Rabbit and Flushed Away as our end of season pick. So if you've never seen those two movies, but you've listened to the podcast, now you definitely should. And you can give us your opinion on them at thebenefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com. At the end of season one, Sam, summarise your final thoughts.
I think it's been fun. I feel like this is the end for everything, but it's not.
No, we'll be back next week.
I think it's been fun, yeah. Yeah, of course. I think there'll be a lot of interesting things to come, playing off what we've already created. But yeah, just keep listening and we'll see where we go.
Yeah, the list of movies keeps growing as well. Every time we do an episode, I remember a new movie. I just keep going. I just think, yeah, there's this one. So stick with us, because if you like late 90s and noughties movies, we're the podcast for you, because that's what you're going to get, folks.
And memories of those times too.
And memories of those things too, yeah. Thank you so much for listening to season one. We'll be back next week with a mini-sode, which will be our response to the countless listeners' questions that we can't get around to. Let's do this in a particular way. We'll share out the questions, so you get to ask some of me and I get to ask some of you, let's do it that way, and then you know, we'll share those questions somehow. It's fine, we'll figure it out.
Otherwise it just becomes an interview with me.
Exactly. Thank you so much for listening. Today is Speak Like a Pirate Day, so it's probably best to say something piratey on the way out. Over to you, Sam.
Arr, me hearties.
Arr, me hearties. Brilliant.
Bring me that horizon, I think.
That's a good one. All I can think of is to say the word savvy. Savvy.
Savvy.
Savvy. That's it.
I'm trying to think of any other one-liners that it ends on.
I probably deserve that one.
Drink up, me hearties, yo-ho. He does say that at the end of one of the movies, I'm sure.
It was Ellen Hyde, diddly dee, a pirate's life for me. Is that a song? Have I just made that up?
It is, yeah. Excellent. I don't know if that's also the one line.
The other one, my favourite line in Pirates of the Caribbean, to go back to one we did last week, was, I can't quote the direct line, but it's after Elizabeth says the boat's going to come and pick her up, and then it is. And he says it like, she's going to be a nightmare to live with after this.
There'll be no living with her after this.
That's it. Best line in the movie. Best line in the movie. Thanks so much for listening. Just for me now to say good night, Sam.
And good night, Dad. You specifically, not every dad in the world.
Bye, everyone. Back next week.
Bye.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see. History.